to Extraordinary Perspectives. I'm your host, Tino Hove. I want to call myself the Extraordinary Host. What do you think?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Welcome. I'm the Extraordinary Host, Tino Hove. We've got MC Woke up in here.
In the house.
Yeah, you can catch her on her Instagram at MC Woke.
MC underscore Woke, yes.
At MC underscore Woke. Tell your friends. She is amazing. So tell us a bit about yourself and what you're here to talk to us about.
Sure. So I wear a couple different hats in the community.
Are we not streaming on your phone too? That's pretty cool. No.
Oh,
is that not a thing we do?
I guess we can live stream.
Let's do that. Yeah, let's live stream.
I can live stream on my radio show.
Yeah, do
so
it.
So then we can have like a cross collab kind of deal.
Yeah, let's do that.
Start live. And then people are going to be like, what? They're doing it on two channels?
Exactly. So
they have no excuse not to know what's going on. There you go.
Cool. Awesome. Amazing.
So much fun.
Cool.
Okay, let's put this up over here. If it reads it. Okay.
Does it? Can you guys see us? Okay.
I think so.
At MC underscore Woke.
That's me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then for myself, I am at the underscore Tino Hove.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at the underscore Tino Hove. This is Tino Hove. And let's do this. So you were telling us a bit about yourself.
Yes. Okay. So like I said, I wear a couple different hats. In the community,
your camera's upside down.
Is it really? Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Yes.
There we go.
Yeah.
What do I do? I am the host of Raw Colors, which aired on CKUW at the University of Winnipeg. I also am the founder of Blackspace Winnipeg, and I'm a vocal percussionist. I beatbox. I like to create music around the city. And I've done a lot of work in the social justice sector in Winnipeg, across the city, challenging discrimination, anti-Black racism, through community events, initiatives, artist demonstrations, workshops, and yeah.
Yeah, cool. Okay. And what's the topic? What's the extraordinary perspective we're going to be listening to today?
Extraordinary perspectives. Okay. I have been doing community organizing for the past, I want to say, let me switch this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say 5 years.
Okay.
And a lot of the work that comes along with doing community activism, community organizing, grassroots initiatives, can be quite taxing, and a lot of emotional labor is required in these realms.
Makes sense.
What I've noticed lately is, and a conversation that's kind of surfaced within the, I would say, community organizing, nonprofit, grassroots type of conversations, is who is the who has the right to advocate for a community? Specifically, I'm speaking to the Black community. And I went to a conference back in April in Durham, North Carolina, called Black Communities Across North America. And a Black community is a conference for collaboration. And it connected Black organizations, businesses, communities all across North America. I was one of four Canadians that were there, and it was really interesting to see how Black folks are organizing across the country and across the continent, across North America, from grassroots initiatives to policy to arts to community development, just everything that encompasses what we are facing collectively, what we're struggling with as a community, and how to sustain, grow, and build where we come from. So I went there, obviously representing Blackspace, and it was great because I networked with folks who have been doing this work really for years, who have worked in the civil rights movement, who worked with folks like Martin Luther King, with Malcolm X.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You met people who worked with Martin Luther
King? Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Like there was a trumpet player who toured with James Brown who made it down to the conference, and just incredible and invaluable knowledge that was exchanged throughout.
Like what were these people saying? Like, what's it like to have been there with Malcolm X telling people that my last name is an X and Martin Luther King, like, I think, talking about dreams and stuff? Like, that's crazy.
I think so. I think it's quite, it was quite surreal. Like, I remember last year, it's actually, wow, it's been over a year now. Last year, Dr. Angela Davis came to Winnipeg, and
yes,
she's a real pioneer in the social justice movement, mm-hmm. Across North America. And, you know, when I met her, I was kind of in awe because she worked with the Black Panther Party and in those circles, and faced so much from the system in the States, mm-hmm. and, you know, is a symbol of freedom and justice and so many things. So, you know, when she was telling, and when I was doing research on her, like, she met folks like Nina Simone and Ooh. Just people who you can only imagine what it's like to meet them. And it's really surreal how folks who have been doing Black organizing in the States and throughout Canada just have so much stories. And what I appreciated about this conference I went to is that I was surrounded by a lot of elders, by a lot of older folks who, you know, paved the way in regards to community organizing. And a lot of the times when you are trying to recreate or rebirth something, mm-hmm. in this element, Blackspace, like Blackspace Winnipeg, yeah, this might be something that's been running for the past 2 years. We're going to do stuff continuously in the future. But, you know, this isn't the first time Black folks have started something in the city. Oftentimes, when they do start it, you know, there's momentum, and then with the nature of nonprofits and the nature of mm-hmm. community organizing, people get burned out, people get tired, and, you know, moments. I think movements, I don't think they die. They just they reshift, they refocus, right? And even meeting these people, mostly throughout the South, the Southern states in America, I can't put to words the amount of, like, I felt I was there for 4 days, and I actually got to breathe because okay. I was with people who understand why you're doing the work you're doing, the importance of it, the value of it, and it's just, when I go to the States, it's a different type of community that is extremely welcoming and encouraging.
Okay. And you say you've been doing this work, and you say that a lot of times you get burnt out, and you mm-hmm. started the conversation talking about the legitimacy of who gets to represent Black people.
Yes.
Right. And I can see how that's a conversation for yourself, being someone who's mixed race, mm-hmm. And being something that's been in the forefront of media for a while, as to who is Black, right?
Yes.
Like, who is Black and who gets to organize Black things?
Absolutely.
And you haven't been someone on the forefront in Winnipeg of Black community organization. Tell right. us a bit about how that's impacted you.
Absolutely. I mean, just to give a bit more context, I was raised by my mom, who is mm-hmm. Jamaican. And I've always been fundamentally more connected to my Caribbean roots than mm-hmm. my, you know, Eastern European side. And I can't ever deny the impact and influence my mom has had both on my identity, my career, how I have come to be in this world. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, taught me from a very young age to always be proud of where you come from. And, mm-hmm. and what I see the most is biracial people who refuse to acknowledge their the side of them that is, you know, diverse, that are not white.
Is that a thing? Because I've noticed more that biracial people acknowledge being Black more than they acknowledge being being white or being one of the other.
Yeah. Right,
so one of the other. See that you are, it's always you either acknowledge one part of you and not acknowledge the other. I haven't met a lot of people who are like, I am both of these things. Right. And I know it's especially being biracial in terms of black and white. It's literally you're either black or white. Right. Because you either part of the privilege or you're part of the non-privilege.
Right.
What's the impact of that?
Well, I think that's those lines are not always clear because as I see it, I've met a lot of biracial folks throughout my lifetime who were not as comfortable to acknowledge their blackness or define it or explore it, you know, for whatever reason it was. But I think that just if you are not acknowledging predominantly your roots and how you present, mm-hmm. like, this is why when I go back to the States, mm-hmm. when I went down to Durham, there was really no, I was like surrounded by black folks for 4 days. Like mm-hmm. it was a conference. It was like black folks embracing each other, black love, black strategy. It was fantastic. And when I went down there and I was, I presented on black space and the work that I'm doing there, I think their sense of redefining and defining blackness comes out differently because I wasn't, I felt very welcomed and mm-hmm. I felt at home. Like people were like, yes, you are biracial and you benefit from light skin privilege and, you know, shadism and colorism are huge elements in the black community. We really have to discuss authentically in a safe space and work through the trauma in black communities with light skin privilege. And you can't ever escape that reality. I can never escape that reality as a woman of color, as a light-skinned woman of color, as a light-skinned black woman.
I see Eli Vance is on there. Eli Vance, great photographer. He's on my live right now.
Oh, nice.
Usually has a lot of things to say. So feel free to throw a comment in there.
There you go.
But yes, colorism.
Yeah,
keep
colorism.
Going.
Yeah. And I think it's, like I said, when I go down to the States, I feel at home and I feel very much accepted and welcome for the work that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in certain contexts and in certain areas in the world, where you go, if you're black, you're black.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that there's been a lot of conversation around legitimacy within blackness because, you know, people have appropriated and taken from the black community significantly who don't come from the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the politics behind representation, you mm-hmm. know, and identity politics, which is another huge element when you're talking about shadism, colorism. So it's not necessarily, I've never been one to pick a side. I've never felt like I'm more this than I'm that because I was raised by my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think given it comes down to experience, right? But I can say this much, even though I have benefited from light skin privilege, I identify as a black woman, I present as a woman of color, or however people see me, what they want to see me. But, you know, my Eastern European roots and the Russian Jewish community mm-hmm. has never tried to claim me as one of their own. And I've always felt represented and comfortable and safe in predominantly black and POC spaces. And I don't think that's going to change.
But that's something that I feel we need to address. Me being just black, I don't have much else in me.
Mm-hmm.
just black, you can see by the skin tone.
Right.
But it feels like people take everything that's cool about being black except being black.
Absolutely.
Like, it's like, we want everything about you.
Mm.
We just don't want to be you.
100%.
Right, they're like, oh, we'll love your music. But, like, you know, just don't come to our schools or anything.
Exactly.
Right? Or, like, oh, we'll love the way you dress. Just, like don't let our kids see you dress that way, right?
That's right.
How does that impact you being someone who's biracial? So you've got, by biracial, I mean, like, you've got a bit of both. So we've got people like Logic out there who've been saying a lot about being biracial.
Right.
Like, Logic just looks white, but he's half black,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says that a lot of times, like, he faces the stigma in the reverse way, where the white community takes him in, yet the black community doesn't, right?
Right.
What Can you tell me a bit about how it feels to be in a situation where, like, people want everything about being black except being black? At the same time, you go and you're like, sometimes you have to justify you representing black people.
Yeah. I have. So, and I'll put this in context with, like, my music
okay.
outlet.
Okay. She's a beatboxer, by
I'm
the way.
I'm a beatboxer. Yes, yeah. sir. So, like, I've seen. There's this organization called Beatbox Canada. Okay. And the people I've seen come out of Beatbox Canada are predominantly white men and women who are winning competitions, who are, you know, traveling Europe, going on tours, going across the country. And I'm just like, listen, like, hold on 2 seconds. You're talking about beatboxing and the fundamental roots where that stems from, jazz and hip hop and black mm-hmm. folks, you know, across North America, the Caribbean, and yeah. all countries in Africa. And I'm just thinking, listen. You can't, like, the way beatboxing has shaped to be and how it's kind of formed lately, I don't think it, the roots are as prominent. And it kind of, I think, fell off the map in terms of legitimacy, because when I see a art form appropriated predominantly by folks who do not come from the demographic in which it started, it's quite alarming. And I think that that's where I've seen folks who, you know, they want to rap, they want to mm-hmm. beatbox, they want to redefine urban cultural expression, mm-hmm. but not give any legitimacy to the folks who started that. And even mm-hmm. bringing it at
home. Sorry, I'm back. I had to check a message.
Oh, yeah, no
Come
problem.
yeah.
Even at home, I know that there have been organizations around the city who, for a long time, would maybe reach out to the black community, but they don't have, there's no black folks working in the logistics, in the admin, mm-hmm. in the decision making. They will hire you for what they need you and then dispose you when they don't need you for that service anymore.
Okay.
So I think that that's one element I've seen of wanting to be black, you know, appropriating mm-hmm. a physical appropriation of the hair, the culture, and,
yeah.
and like the post or present, I guess, Black Panther era, you know, the pro African, the Afrofuturism, mm-hmm. And, like, you know, really appropriating African culture from Afrobeats to dashikis to all of this nonsense I'm seeing.
All of these nonsense.
Yeah, of appropriating now, like, African culture, and not give, and it was never acknowledged before. And now, when something's trending, and that's why it's tricky when something's a trending topic or something's trending in the community, because it'll get so taken quickly mm-hmm. by the mainstream and remorphed and diluted and dissected to where its authenticity is a fragment of what it used to be.
But isn't that just a part of culture cannot move forward if it does not move forward, right? So
right.
if someone's looking at it like, okay, we can't say we want black African culture or whatever culture to be present, and then we're like, okay, but we want to keep it the way we have it already, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if we're looking at the appropriation of it, I look at cultural appropriation as winning in the battle of culture. I feel like European culture, Western culture, is the most appropriated culture in the world.
European?
Yeah, it is. No, wait, think about it.
What do you mean?
Okay, think about it, right?
Okay.
When I say it's the most appropriated culture, it's like it's the base. Like, you go to Africa, well, I've been in a lot of places in Africa, and, like, they speak English.
Mm-hmm.
We dress like this.
Mm-hmm.
People get weaves. You have straight hair.
Mm-hmm.
The whiter you are, the more respect you're given,
mm-hmm.
right? And then we look at it and we're like, oh, okay, that's cultural appropriation. Like, it is. We speak their language, right? And, like, it is. Like, we took it. Well, we didn't take it. We were given. Okay, we weren't given. We were forced. But
right.
but we take it, and then we made it part of our own. And they are doing the same thing. And then when they do it, we complain. So, like, is that fair to the colored version?
No, because white people imposed.
Okay, MJ Almighty just said appropriation and colonization are different. MJ, yeah. I want you to clarify on that a bit
so,
more.
So,
colonized to think that
yeah,
way.
So,
okay, I think I might have struck a nerve.
So, colonization,
mm-hmm.
imposed colonization on every, there's not one country or corner of this planet that white supremacy does not manifest or exist. So when you're saying that, well, you know, we've adapted, we speak English, we, you know, weave our hair to be straight, that's internalized white supremacy. That's systemic. And that's the global practice of white supremacy, right? There's no, had colonization not been a thing, the world, I think, would look very different today. And it's wrong the other way when white people take, because historically white people have taken so much from
to you. I'm listening to you.
I think that they've taken so much historically and for so long people of color have not been credited or given the acknowledgement of our achievements and our contributions to the world in general.
I like it.
Okay. Yeah,
keep going.
Well, that was pretty much my spiel. It was
okay.
Like, I don't think you can, there's nothing that white people have done that people of color and black folks haven't done first. So.
Wait a minute. Okay. So. Nothing white people have done that people of color haven't done first.
That's correct.
But, like, they had guns.
And?
And then we took them. So they did guns first. And that's power, right? So, okay, here's my argument. So my argument is this.
Okay.
Okay, we were colonized. Great. We were forced into believing these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it stems even back to colorism, right?
Right.
Colorism is like the lighter you are, the better you're treated. Right?
Yes.
So the whiter you are, the better you're treated,
mm-hmm.
pretty much, right? And my argument is this. So we were colonized and we were forced into these things. Great. I mean, not great, but at that point, we really didn't have much of a choice, right? It was forced on us.
Yes.
Right? But from then up to now, we've had time to decide whether or not this is something we want to keep, and we've kept it. Is that not now a choice?
No, because the power of colonization and white supremacy is that it's internalized and it's deep-seated and it's rooted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessary. Like, this is, if you've been through something traumatic in your life, if you've been through trauma,
mm-hmm.
and
mental slavery, okay.
Right, like, if you've been through trauma,
your history.
You can't necessarily, you don't know how to come out of something that has been inflicted and imposed on you. Not just, you know, think of this generation, but intergenerational trauma.
Yeah.
Right? And what people of color and black folks have been through in a North American context and a global context collectively for throughout the duration of pre-colonial, pre-colonization,
okay, pre-colonial,
and then post-colonial is what we're supposed to be in now. But you know, that's a different argument altogether. But there, to say that, well, don't you have a choice?
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of like the whole Kanye West thing, where he's
Yeezy.
Like,
it was
a choice to be slaves. That's just really problematic, and
it is.
I don't think that given the nature of colonialism and given the nature of white supremacy, and it's used as a tool to conquer and divide and to destroy not just your community but your psyche,
mm-hmm.
Your position in the world, it goes much deeper, but I don't think at all that
I hear you and the reason I push back there is is we can only go so far until we realize that no one's coming to save us.
What do you mean by being saved?
So look, so we're saying that the system's messed up,
Yes.
Right? And that we've been forced to think a certain way. Mm-hmm. Right. And that we've internalized it, like your friend Ndubelta.
Who? Oh, Endo.
Endo, like your friend Endo said, mental slavery.
Yes. All right.
There's this beautiful line by Bob Marley where he says, "Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds." Right.
Right. Yeah.
And in as far as we do not take ownership of the fact that, sure, these things have been forced on us, and sure, for a long time we had no say in it, but we do now. Mm-hmm. Right. There needs to come a point where the African and Black community decides to be like, okay, you can't ask the person who enslaved you to free you. They don't want to free you. Mm-hmm. This is working for them, right? They're sitting back, they're like, this is working. Mm-hmm. We like this.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then where are they like, oh, please, let us be like you. And they're like, no, but we like this. This is fine. Right. When is the African community finally going to be like, okay, these people are not changing, all right? And we need to admit that colorism is on us, right? We are the ones who are deciding that the lighter someone looks, mm-hmm. that we treat them differently. We are the ones who are deciding that we are not going to let certain people of color represent us. Mm-hmm. We are the ones who are not speaking our language. We are the ones who are not being proud of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. When does that happen, and how do we move forward there? Eli Vance, is African community and Black community the same thing? Oh, that's a good question. What do you think?
Is
African community and Black community the same thing?
Because there's such a large, there's a diversity in both, right? Like how you self-define and redefine and explore your Blackness is, you know, you're right, but... There's a lot of folks who come from different countries in Africa and come mm-hmm. here, and they're labeled, you know, automatically at times as Black, and they don't want to accept that label, and that's mm-hmm. their right, because they want to represent where they come from. And then Black folks who are born here or, you know, have moved here and, you know, redefining identity. I don't think that it's complicated, because it's like you've been through the evolution of Black folks and how we've been categorized over time. Like in a North American concept, it was like colored and then Negro and then like in the States, African American or Afro Canadian or like Afro Caribbean Canadian or then Black. And there's just all these different types of subcategories throughout time and different identities. But 100%, it is different. Like even folks who define themselves as African, you know, don't necessarily in the same breath define themselves as Black, and that's completely okay.
Is it though?
Yes, I think so.
And I'll tell you why I ask.
Okay.
The reason I ask is it okay, is that a nation divided against itself cannot prosper.
Right.
So I think it's okay in as long as it does not create there's enough conflict among Black people.
Yes.
As it is, we're already fighting each other enough.
Yes, for sure.
Right. I feel like the more we start subdividing our culture, mm-hmm. the more we're giving room for conflict. Don't you think so?
Yes. Well, there's an elder in the community. His name's Jerry Atwell, and he said something that has stuck with me now that I'm always going to take with me moving forward. Is that
it's a quote, guys?
It's a quote.
Write this down. She's saying a quote
that Black folks are connected by circumstance and not ideology. Huh. So that's why we're not on the same page collectively, because under the umbrella of being Black, of Blackness, there's so much that encompass that identity. And I think collectively, yes, we should be on the same page in regards to community support, development. But it's divided because we come from so many different nations. And, you know, you don't say that to necessarily white people or other groups, because all Black people are labeled as one, right? And people have to remember that there's diversity, uniqueness, and identity, and such a beautiful and unique identity of what it is to be Black. So I don't know necessarily if ever one day we're going to be on the same page, but I know that there's a lot of things that we can be on the same page about that yeah. affect us collectively. But like I said, it's you're talking about like so many different people.
For sure. Well, we're just about to wrap up with Alexa here. We're going to have Kalechi jump on with us here, okay? Alexa, any final words? Actually, before you say your final words, yeah. I'm going to do a quick promo for myself.
Sure, go ahead.
Cool. So if you want to watch more of the show, so it's called Extraordinary Perspectives. It's on 101.5 UMFM. If you want to watch the live feed that's uncut and unfiltered, really, follow me on my Instagram handle. That's @the_TinoHove. Go on the YouTube channel. The video will be up, all edited with nice tags, looking pretty, you know. Go on YouTube. Follow me on YouTube. It's TinoHove on YouTube, or Facebook, the TinoHove.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me.